Eoch tanuyap, kuige iwans kuyens na. Hi everybody, my name is Kuige Iwans. I'm a member of the Squamish Nation and the Yagalanis clan of the Haida Nation. You're listening to Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. We live, work, play, and broadcast from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations.
Thank you. Welcome to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection, your weekly public affairs program about the cooperative sector and social economy, proudly broadcasting on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. I'm Sandy Goldman. Tonight we focus on two organizations standing up to save the earth and feed its people. Both are based in Vancouver. Shift Delivery Co-op contributes to a greener city by replacing conventional trucks with pedal-powered trikes and electric cargo vehicles. It's structured as a worker co-op and collaborates with its clients and customers to create a more resilient and healthy world. Devin McClelland is Shift's business team lead. We had a lengthy conversation about Shift's values, partnerships, challenges, and future goals. I began by asking how this co-op got started 10 years ago. Here's our discussion. I've been around the city and seen the Shift tricycles and the folks peddling them with bright advertising. It's really catchy. And I know that you're delivering goods in a sustainable way through pedal power. And was that the original focus and still continues to be to contribute to a greener city and help that way at the same time, giving your worker members meaningful employment? Tell us a bit about those two goals. Mm-hmm.
The first pillar is that sustainability piece. And it's not a CSR department. It's not a campaign within Shift. It's embedded in what we're doing. So we have a fleet of a dozen vehicles, and those vehicles are electric assist cargo tricycles. We have two electric e-bikes. We don't own any assets that are automobiles. And that still exists with 10 years later. We tested some automobiles, some electric SUVs, but we've since moved on from that and continue to be bicycle based. And it's quite astounding that that we do still exist in doing that. And after 10 years and a few bike lanes here and there from the city of Vancouver, there really hasn't been any other substantive efforts for bike-based businesses to enter the market until this year, which maybe we can get into. As for that second pillar, as worker members, it's been up and down. As people left the co-op from the founding, the co-op was in a position where, well, we need a minimum of three co-op members to be a co-op, and that became quite difficult. Mm-hmm. But the co-op came out of that and brought on members. It went back up to five. It went up to 10. And now we're hovering around 50% of our total employees are members of the co-op, which means that we democratically own the business.
That's terrific. And I think that you must be hoping that that will grow over time, that you'll have more member owners. One of the things that really struck me in reading some background is that you're creating empowering and meaningful work. I mean, to have that right there up front. And what does that look like for your workers and your member owners?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
So I'll just give an example. Of somebody, and I won't name any names, but someone has recently come in a year ago and they became a member and they started as a delivery worker. And so they learned about the business. They learned about our clients and our clients' needs. They learned about the city. They learned about the vehicles we use and the team. Since then, they've been able to move into other roles like office management, like dispatching and logistics, which is really a key component of our organization. We operate 7 days a week, 365, rain or shine. So it's really important that we have committed employees, committed team members that are able to not only do deliveries, but then translate that into dispatching other people, dispatching your peers, training your peers. And that can be quite empowering and uplifting, I think. And we're doing a lot of this without requiring folks to have even a driver's license or specialized training. There's a lot of collaboration that's going on amongst the team.
That's very important as a worker, to feel that you're part of something, that you're valued, you're not just a cog in the wheel, and learning as you go from others who have, you know, perhaps done that work before on dispatch, or and then becoming knowledgeable enough and confident enough to train new workers. It's a tremendous feeling, and being part of something that's democratic. And from what I've read, you carry over that collaborative attitude to your relationships with your clients, or you call them partners, the people that you work with whose goods you deliver. And one of them that we're interested in and have spoken to is Food Stash, who are recovering and redistributing food across the city. And you two have collaborated, two organizations, on something called the Pedal to Plate program. Why did Shift want to get involved in that?
Well, I think one of the reasons that it started was Food Stash came to us and showed their commitment and desire to want to do something sustainably. And they wanted to work with us. And they really put that forward. And there were a lot of hurdles to overcome. They were willing to work with us on those. And as for Shift wanting to work with Food Stash, we've been specializing in the movement of groceries for a very long time, the movement of food. One of our founding partners was Spud. So we had that skill. But we also, there's so much alignment with what they're doing around distributing food that would either go to waste, and getting that to people who need it, and preventing food waste and additional emissions from being distributed into our atmosphere.
Exactly. And that started as a pilot project. I believe the funding for that pilot project ended, but you're going to continue to collaborate and deliver these food packages. Will that go forward?
Yes, we will. We will keep working together. And one of the really, really cool things about the pilot project and the support that we got there was that Food Stash was able to move from a commissary kitchen in Burnaby to a more strategic location in Olympic Village, which is really centrally located in our bicycle delivery zone. So what we did there is we removed the need for a truck trip from Burnaby to our facility to then further distribute. And so now we're able to do pickups directly with our electric assist cargo tricycles from their facility. And we're distributing to more members on more days. So we've essentially doubled the membership that we're delivering to since we started with them.
It's a very productive partnership and collaboration. And as you say, you're aligned in your values of both wanting to get food redistributed and reducing carbon emissions that would otherwise come from the food being dumped. And you're doing it all, you know, through pedal power. I guess you're limited by the size of your cargo trikes in that what you can carry throughout the city. You say you're doing a lot of with food and groceries. What other kinds of things do you get from place to place?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have delivered all sorts of goods. If it fits in the tricycle, we can deliver it. And we've moved linen, dry cleaning, uniforms, baked goods, coffee, prepared meals, groceries, office supplies, you name it. And a lot of these relationships and a lot of the customers we're delivering to is B2B. So we are limited on what we can move with an electric assist tricycle, but it's more than you'd think. There's a common misconception that, order is 20 kilos. That's pretty heavy for a bike. But we're operating with a capacity of about 180 kilograms per tricycle. And so, in some cases we're putting 30, upwards of 30 or 32 orders, deliveries in a tricycle.
Yeah, and I guess the companies that are working with you also share your values around reducing emissions. I mean, that's become even more important now. Look at the summer that we're going through here in British Columbia, across the world. I mean, so this becomes even more timely and important. You know, we're still in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, anticipating a fourth wave. Maybe it's already here. How did Shift fare once the pandemic took hold in March of 2020? What's the last year and a half been like?
Right away, it meant lots of changes for our business. Packaging was a big, big one. So we do a meal program to SROs in the Downtown East Side, and that's hundreds of meals a day through our partnership with Save on Meats and the Better Life Foundation. All of those meals had to immediately become individually packaged because someone decided that that was what we had to do. And so we had lots of little things like that that you wouldn't expect that end up changing the timing of the deliveries when their kitchen is ready. And that trickles on to the residents. And when they would usually expect the food deliveries to be done, now it's happening an hour earlier, 2 hours later.
Right.
We also had a big drop-off, 100% drop-off in office orders.
Sure.
So you can think about food that's going to offices, supplies that are going to offices, and catering. It was a pretty important part of our business. So a lot of the capacity that we had to do that office work was really shifted over to the residential side of things. And we saw growth in the number of deliveries that we were doing and the number of customers we were serving at the start of COVID.
Right.
That was difficult. That was really hard on us as delivery workers, as the laborers, hard on our bodies. It was hard on our fleet of cargo tricycles. Compounding that was a bike industry that was flourishing. Parts were going out, were being sold out. So we've been struggling with the parts and the maintenance of the cargo tricycles this year for sure. But we've also noticed that business hasn't picked up again at the rate that it dropped off. Mm. And that has been difficult for us.
Did you have to let go of any worker members or anyone who was there as things slowed down and just riding the wave of the last year? Because we know that in many industries that has been the case.
Yeah, we do have a process for I guess you'd say removing members and changing hours there. But we haven't really had to do that substantially, and we have not had to lay anyone off. We've been able to access employment subsidies from the government.
Great.
That have been really critical in enabling us to continue to meet our cash flow needs. And so I will say, though, that a lot of us are both delivery workers, like myself, but some of us also have other responsibilities. Mine is customer service and sales, for example. And in my earlier example, someone might do dispatching as well.
Right.
So people had to be quite flexible during the last year and a half. If they needed, 30, 40 hours a week, they might have to be doing other types of work.
So I'm somebody, one of many who through the pandemic has been using these food delivery services, skip the dishes and one thing and another. And it's great to see the person ride up on the bike. It makes me really happy to see my food coming to me by bike. What about Shift? I understand you've started something similar called Co-op Cycle Delivery Service. Am I on the right track there?
Totally. Yeah, well, co-op cycle is a really interesting story, and isn't new to the world. Co-op Cycle was started in Europe. It was a collective of worker-owned bike couriers. And they formed a federation called Co-op Cycle to share resources. And that key resource was technology, which was the platform. It would allow them to put the means of production, or I guess in this case, the means of service, into the hands of the workers, and essentially try to give themselves better work and not have to continue feeding off of the tech giants like Skip and Uber and DoorDash over there. There's Deliveroo and others. So Shift, we've been using the Co-op Cycle technology for routing and dispatching of our regular clients for 2 years now, and it's been going really well. And as you said, food delivery has been on the rise. So we've worked with Co-op Cycle and been making some projects internally to try and get a local instance, a local version of that platform up. Co-op Cycle is an e-commerce platform for local businesses, so restaurants or shops, and it gives them a customer-facing portal. All those deliveries that go through Co-op Cycle in Vancouver are going to be done on e-bike by Shift, and they're going to be done by employees who may or may not be worker owners, but always have the opportunity of becoming a worker owner. Right. So it's really the most responsible platform from a labor perspective and environmental sustainability perspective.
So these are is this food delivery basically that Shift is doing using yes. Co-op Cycle? And has the public become aware of this platform and this alternative to, you know, Skip the Dishes? Or is it just sort of growing here with certain restaurants on the east side? Or tell us a bit about that.
We have not done any big pushes to the public yet. What we'd really like to have first is that minimal viable product, which is, we're saying five restaurants in the Commercial Drive, Strathcona, Chinatown, and Gastown areas. So we can have them ready to go. We can have their pricing set up, the pricing that they want to have that works for them. That's one of the keys with this program. Set up their menus, and then when we have those five restaurants, we can click launch and offer Co-op Cycle to the public.
What's on the horizon? What are some future plans, goals over the next few years for Shift?
Well, I'd like to highlight two. The first one is definitely getting Co-op Cycle going. And so that means bringing on some of those local restaurants and local shops. So if there are any listeners that are local businesses and they want a responsible e-commerce platform, visit coopcycle.ca and you can find more info and register your business there. The second thing that's on the horizon is really exciting for the industry, and that is the micro hub. It's a last mile bike-based micro hub in the city of Vancouver, and Shift has been invited to participate in that. So what we will be doing is operating a second strategic location, which will bring us closer to customers, bring us closer to maybe some new clients in Olympic Village, and also connect us with some other delivery and logistics companies that will be sharing the space. So hopefully in the next 1 to 2 years, we'll see not just Shift delivery tricycles and Shift delivery e-bikes on the road, but we will see other logistics companies doing the same thing. And the micro hub is really the start of that. And so we'll be doing a lot of work around getting that running smoothly and then trying to figure out how we can collaborate with some of the other users of that micro hub.
So when you say micro hub, are we talking about a geographic area? What does micro hub actually mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what we hopefully have in 5 to 10 years in Vancouver is a hub and spoke model. So we have multiple small hubs that are located throughout the city. This could be in Vancouver, in Richmond, in Burnaby, in dense neighborhoods where there's lots of residents, there's lots of businesses, and vehicles, larger vehicles, will drop off batches of orders at the hub, and smaller, lighter, more sustainable vehicles, those could be e-bikes, scooters, automated robots or whatnot, that are moving those deliveries in a more people-centric way on the last mile.
When you say the last mile, what is that? That's a term you've used often. What does that mean in terms of, I know literally the last mile of delivery, but there's a concept behind that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the last mile is 1.5, 1.6 kilometers. I'll say that Shift is operating in a much larger area. We're like 6 kilometer area. So we're actually doing a lot more than just the last mile. But the idea is that if you look at a dense city center like downtown, there's really no need for trucks and large vehicles to be entering into that space. When we make centers for people that are walking and rolling and cycling, we also are able to move commercial goods in those centers by walking and rolling and cycling. And so the last mile on the commercial side is really paired with a change and a movement towards more people-centered modes of transport.
That was Devin McClelland, business team lead for Shift Delivery Co-op in Vancouver. Let's take a break, then come back with more of tonight's show.
Hi, this is John Boutte from New Orleans, Louisiana, and you're listening on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio. Keep on listening, baby.
Give me that.
It's mine.
I want it.
No, it's mine.
No, give it to me.
You have to give it back.
Stop. Instead of fighting, try working together. Honestly, openly, in a spirit of caring for others. And tune in to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection. Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. on CFRO 100.5 FM, on your dial and online at cooperadio.org. Try cooperating. You'll feel better for it.
Side around, side me. life anyway.
And we're back. You're listening to Each for All, the Cooperative Connection on Vancouver Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM, and online at cooperadio.org. This summer, I was in my neighborhood Safeway and went over to check out the display of local berries. There was a staff member clearing away boxes of strawberries and raspberries right into the garbage. I asked if these would be saved for use elsewhere, but she said no, the food would be dumped. I was concerned knowing that food insecurity has been steadily increasing, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. I looked into whether we had any organizations rescuing and redistributing food in Vancouver. To my great relief, the Food Stash Foundation is doing just that. Former Executive Director Julia Hunter explains.
Food Stash is in its fifth year of operation. We were founded in 2016 by David Shine, who at first was inspired after watching a documentary called Just Eat It. And in that documentary, it highlighted the challenges and the amount of food that goes to waste, not only in Vancouver where we operate, but around the world as well. And then at the same time, the issue of food insecurity being so high in a first world country like Canada. So David set out initially as a one-man mission, just picking up food from local grocers and shops and redistributing that perishable surplus food that would otherwise go to waste to other local charities. And then after about 2 years of that redistribution that he set up, they then went on to launch the Rescued Food Box program, which still runs to this day. And so that was an attempt to rescue that surplus food and then not only redistribute it to organizations, but also be able to support families and individuals at the household level. So those boxes of perishable healthy food, half of which is fruits and veggies, milk, meat, packed with goodness, those are distributed to food insecure households across Vancouver. And so really Food Stash's twofold mission is one of the environmental side of food waste. And then the second fold is the food insecurity that continues to exist and is only getting worse due to COVID-19. So we attempt to connect those two and bridge that gap.
Let's talk about the environmental effect of all this food waste, because I'm not sure that people really think about that, but it's important to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we think about, let's just picture ourselves in our homes right now, when we put food in the compost and that goes to a landfill or a composting facility, that food breaks down into methane, which is a greenhouse gas. And we know that greenhouse gases are what contribute or what are contributing currently to the climate change crisis that we're in. So worldwide, if food waste were a country, it would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter in the world. And every year in Canada, over 56 million metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent emissions created by food waste is released. So that's just to give you an idea of the scale of the problem of food waste. And that's at every level as well, right from production at the farm level through processing, manufacturing, distribution, the retail side, which is where Food Stash is currently primarily focused, is grocery stores and retail. And then at the household level too, there's food waste.
In your experience, is so much food getting wasted? What is that attributable to? Are we just lazy? Is too much food being produced? Are grocers too fussy? Is the public too fussy if a piece of fruit has a blemish? I mean, where does this originate from, do you think?
Yeah, I'll give my opinion. I mean, I think lots of reasons. It's definitely a systemic issue. The first few things that come to my mind are the fact that our current food system is designed for yield, to make as much food as possible to meet the demand. But we have enough food. It's not a lack of food. It really is a distribution problem. And so as I mentioned earlier, along that food chain, food is going to waste at every single level. So we're producing a high yield, but we're not able to distribute that food in a sustainable way to make sure that all of it is utilized. And then, as you mentioned too, there's issues like quality standards at every level of the food supply chain. So let's say apples, for example, if there's a blemish or a mark or some, you know, little bruise, that might not make it to the next stage of the supply chain, and that would get taken out and go to waste. At the retail level, best before dates are a huge topic that we try to educate others about at Food Stash. And so in grocery stores, items might actually be taken, or they are taken off the shelf if they're approaching that best before date. And that's just because of the policies and procedures that are in place, where these companies only want, you know, the best of the best of their product on those shelves. Even if that item passes that best before date, it's still perfectly healthy. It's safe to consume. It really is just a marker of like quality freshness, but it doesn't mean that it's, you know, expired or rancid or whatnot. So we're able to actually take that product, whether it's milk, yogurt, meat, we're able to take because we instantly freeze it, and then we're able to redistribute it frozen. And so we're able to capture that product, again, that is still perfectly good, and be able to connect it to people who need it most. Mm-hmm. And then at the household level, you know, I think a lot could be said for educating people about reducing food waste in the home. I do think, though, that, as I said earlier, it's a massive systemic issue. So to point the finger at individuals at the household level would be missing a massive part of why the problem exists in the first place. But it still is important to know about how you can reduce food waste in the home. I think more importantly, connecting to where your food comes from, whether that's a community garden, maybe growing your own vegetables, because when folks start to connect to that aspect, they really look at food differently and value it more, and are a little more conscious of, you know, maybe how much food they're buying at the grocery store, how they're organizing their fridge to make sure they're not buying too much. So I think all along there's ways to design it in a better way where food is valued as the resource.
Let's talk about some of the donors. You've got quite a list, from Whole Foods to IGA, and then smaller bakeries and whatnot. When you approach a donor, I understand sometimes it's very hard. They're reluctant to get on board. How do you get new donors to buy in?
It's funny, when I first started, I'd had a lot of conversations with potential food suppliers and donors, and they were hesitant because of liability concerns of donating product, especially if you're dealing with dairy or meat. And so what we say to folks is that there is a Donor Encouragement Act in BC and also Canada-wide that encourages food donors to donate food, and actually removes that liability piece, so that they can donate food without worry, and in good faith to organizations. So that's the biggest question that comes up, or hesitancy. Luckily, in the 2.5 years that I've been a part of Food Stash, I've already noticed a massive shift and momentum gaining, especially in Vancouver. I find Vancouver is very environmentally friendly. People really care about green initiatives and wanting to reduce their footprint and get involved with their community. So in those 2.5 years, it's really been food donors reaching out to us. Like, we don't need to do much outreach. Where we need to do outreach are farms, because those are a little further away in the lower mainland. But in terms of the city, we've been fortunate to work with, as you mentioned, Whole Foods, IGA. We work with a lot of Save-On's, Stong's Market, both locations in North Van and on Dunbar. And so the grocery retailers are getting it. And luckily, when one jumps on the ship, all of them want to jump on that ship, because they realize, you know, this is a no-brainer, this is a win-win. And so if we can work with retailers, and we also work with some strategic partners like Food Mesh to track that data, because the these suppliers also want to know the quantity of food that's going out to inform their own, you know, ordering systems or processes, so that maybe years down the road they can order less or somehow become more efficient. Right. So working with partners like Food Mesh allow us to rescue that food and redistribute it, but also get really accurate data that can be looped back to that supplier so that they can potentially make changes internally as well. So
that's very encouraging to hear that there's more buy-in and you know, they're getting on board with that. From the charity side, the charities that are receiving the rescued food, how is that food being used? For example, the Kettle Society or others, Inland Refugee Society, others that you work with, and you've got quite a few charities that you support.
Yeah, over 20 charities that we work with currently, and that list grows in tandem with the number of suppliers we have. But yeah, we're lucky to work with a variety of charities. We're also lucky to have an amazing driver team that really individualizes that experience once they arrive at the charity. And it is quite individualized because we realize that the charities we work with aren't all the same. It's not all cookie cutter. Some of them are housing units or providers. Some of them are walk-in resource centers or homeless shelters. Some of them are community kitchens making meals. Some of them have cold storage, some of them don't. And so working with the partners to make sure that the food that we're delivering to them can actually be used, because we don't want food going to waste at the charity level either. We want to make sure that the food we're giving them is actually suitable for the programs and the infrastructure that they have to work with. So about 50% of the charities we work with around there are in the downtown east side. And we've had some long-term partnerships, like you mentioned, the Kettle Society. We've been delivering to them since before my time at Food Stash, so quite a while now. And then some other charities we work with are across Vancouver, some into Burnaby, because we used to be located at YVR Prep, which is right off Boundary Road. So we do have some Burnaby-based charities. But yeah, it's really about matching what we know we're going to get in surplus or can predict to a charity that can actually utilize that food. And then occasionally we do have surplus in our own warehouse that doesn't make it into the food box program and didn't make it into the charity redistribution program. And so we also work with platforms like foodrescue.ca, which is an arm of Second Harvest in Toronto, to post that product. And then other charities can claim that surplus. So we're able to make those kind of like ad hoc pickups every now and again. And it also helps us to create more connections in the community, because charities that we've maybe never heard of or worked with are suddenly coming out to pick up, you know, let's say like 8 boxes of bread that we couldn't redistribute that week. So that's really helpful for us as well in terms of broadening our network. Right now, we're at about 70,000 pounds of perishable food per month that we're rescuing and redistributing. About 75% of that monthly total goes to our partner charities. The other 25% comes back to the warehouse, where we sort through it, package it up into those rescued food boxes, and deliver it to households. This year, and luckily thanks to the partnership with Shift Delivery over 2020, we've been able to really scale that food box delivery with the help of their electric trikes that they deliver those food boxes with. And we've also been really fortunate to receive a Sprinter van donated to us from Whole Foods Market that we just received in June. So we're very excited about it.
That's excellent.
Yeah. And so when we think about our fleet, we really have 2 vehicles going full tilt 7 days a week, which has allowed us to get to that 70,000 pounds. Now with that Sprinter van, it will likely, once we have enough suppliers built into that vehicle, it will likely enable us to bring on another 30,000 pounds per month. And so on an annual basis, that will allow us to achieve over 1 million pounds of rescued food redistributed per year. So it is a massive puzzle piece. You need the fleet to rescue the food. You need some charity partners that can accept a large quantity of that food for their programming. And then we also need to be mindful of our logistics for our food boxes. We wanted to scale that program. We also wanted to do it in a way that was environmentally friendly and not reliant on fossil fuels. And so although it took you know, finding funding and that partnership with Shift Delivery and really mapping out how to scale that program. We're really proud to be at a point where we're at 100 households per week, mindful of our own footprint. And yeah, it's a logistical puzzle piece, but we find a way.
Let's talk about the Rescued Food Box program. Families or individuals, I guess, that want to receive a box, how do they go about receiving that? Is there an application? Do they have to have a referral? How does that work? And is there a cost involved to the recipients?
Mm-hmm. Initially, we did do a referral process. So we asked individuals to connect with, you know, a community health center, a social worker, whatever it might be. And that organization would refer them to the program. We wanted to make sure that we were serving the individuals who needed the program the most. And so that's why that referral helped in that process. But one of the learnings we had during COVID-19 was getting a referral was a massive barrier for people who were self-isolating or suddenly at home with two or three kids, and leaving the house was just logistically really hard for them. And so we actually removed that referral process last year and changed it into a self-referral where we just asked people to describe in a sentence or two why they wanted to join the program. So it's a little bit of a honor system, but so far we've had really good feedback from people. I think the last thing, you know, if you're food insecure, you know, it's, if you're not getting enough food, that's stressful, right? So we don't want to add another barrier to the program. We want it to be as accessible, inclusive as possible. So it's been going really well so far. It's also helped us reach our 100 household per week target. I think we'll be reaching that actually this month. So we're just happy to be able to welcome in people who want to be a part of this program. And we also get really good feedback from our members who are conscious themselves of the food waste of their box. I actually just got a call this morning. One of our members was mentioning how she's finding that a lot of the meat she can't get through herself. And so she wanted to switch to a vegetarian box. And so our program members are they give us really good feedback. They're very engaged. And you asked before about the cost of the box. So we actually do have a monthly fee. It's not attributed to the food itself. It just helps cover the delivery cost. And so our members pay $10 per delivery. So if someone's receiving a weekly food box, their invoice would be $40 for the month. And then we do have individuals who get a bi-weekly box. So that would, of course, be $20 per month. So again, that fee is for the delivery process. It also, we find, helps to really open that line of communication, because when someone is paying for a service, they have a certain level of expectation, you know, that they want out of that program. So by them paying that fee, it also empowers them to give us really honest feedback, which we really appreciate, because we obviously want to make sure that the program meets their needs and their expectations.
It must be very gratifying to have all these folks involved in the efforts, whether it's, you know, a bakery giving, you know, 10 loaves of bread a week to, you know, food box recipients, to charities using that food in, you know, community kitchens, and one thing another, plus all your volunteers and staff. Julia, you're leaving after a number of years as being involved with Food Stash and lately as executive director, and you're going on to the next chapter. What's your takeaway personally and professionally here as you move on to some other ground?
It really takes a village. I think that's my biggest takeaway. When I came into this role with Food Stash and David was stepping onto the board, we were at this stage where we were just right on the cusp. It was this extremely impactful grassroots organization. I remember my first couple of weeks just seeing the number of volunteers. Like, I would show up to a sorting session, there'd be 20 people just sorting through food. And I was like, where did you hear and how did you hear about Food Stash? And like, wow, there's just so many of you. And it just really struck me as something special. And it was in those first few weeks that I realized the potential of this organization. And at the end of the day, everyone needs and deserves the right to access food. And so the reason we deal with so many partners is because of that impact we want to have and because of the support that we need to do the work that we do, whether it's on the supplier side, donors, charity partners, volunteers, which truly make our world go round, right down to our program members who are also champions for Food Stash out in the community. And of course, our staff team that has grown, I think, by fivefold now, that has really built our capacity internally. So it's been a wild ride. It's been very fulfilling. There will always be challenges in the food waste sector, and I'm just grateful to have been a part of this last chapter.
That was Julia Hunter, former executive director of the Food Stash Foundation. Carla Pellegrini has now taken on that role. And Food Stash just opened its rescued food market, where people can pay what they feel and shop in dignity. The market is open Friday afternoons from 3:30 to 6, and there's also a community fridge on site, stocked with food and accessible to people at all times. Both are located at 340 West 2nd Avenue near the Science World SkyTrain station. These are just the latest initiatives by Food Stash to ensure that food does not go to waste and gets into the hands of people who can use it. Way to go, Food Stash. That's it for tonight's edition of Each for All the Cooperative Connection. A big thank you to my fellow cooperator, Joshua Peterman, for putting all the pieces together. I'm Sandy Goldman. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and have a cooperative week.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum, and they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Ooh, ooh, hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.